This episode of The Orb is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for iPhone, iPad and iPod, Android, Kindle, Windows Phone, plus Mac or PC. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm.
This is J.G. Hertzler, General Martok on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, Niners, to another episode of The Orb, our dedicated Deep Space Nine show. I'm Christopher Jones, and joining me once again this week, as he is every single week, is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. Matthew, you've been acting a little bit different today, and I have to ask you, is that a worm in your belly?
Chris, you know, it's kind of an impertinent question, honestly, but yes, it is. You know, I was finally selected for joining today. So I'm very excited. I might sound a little bit different to you, and I might be curt, or I don't know. I've just got a lot of emotions going around inside of me trying to figure all those things out. Apparently, you know, knowing that I've lived 16 different lifetimes, it's a lot to keep in my brain.
Wow. Well, you must be an amazing candidate if you were just selected for joining today and they've already put the symbiont in you.
Well, I mean, I've been in training, you know, for years and years. I just didn't tell anyone, obviously. It's, you know, you don't want to be in training for so many years and then not get picked and then have everybody laugh at you. And so it's right. Good. It's good to finally have gotten to this point. I break out in a strange accent, you know, you'll know way.
Which past host was that?
That was McLagan. Yeah, he was me. Third host. That's right. He was Scottish, which is grand. That's probably where I get my love from Scotch from.
Maybe so. All right. Well, on our last show, we talked about Cliff Bull and his contributions to Deep Space Nine. And we did that show because he passed away and we postponed this show by a week. So tonight we're going to talk about Trill, and of course, related to Cliff Bull, two of the three key episodes in our discussion tonight were episodes directed by Cliff Bull, Equilibrium and Facets, as we talked about on the last show. But the main topic for tonight, what we want to discuss, is whether or not Trill are responsible for the actions of their past hosts. It's a topic that came to mind for me as Trill on Trial. And as I've mentioned on the show in recent months, I'm doing another rewatch of the series. And early on, as I was passing the episode Dax, I was watching that again, and it really got me thinking about this topic that's addressed in that episode. But what got me thinking about it even more is the fact that the position that is taken in that episode is really, at least for me, I feel contradicted throughout much of the rest of the series, especially in the third season when we get to Equilibrium and Facets and we start learning a lot more about who the Trill are and how the relationship works. And Matthew, I'm not sure that I really have a clear position on whether a current Trill host should be held accountable for actions of past hosts. So I'm really, really interested today to find out your thoughts on this topic.
Well, my thought was this, as I've been thinking about this, obviously, now for a couple of weeks, you know, a current host who has the symbiont put in them doesn't have any of those memories or any of that until the symbiont enters them. Mm-hmm. And the symbiosis community, obviously, if there's things hidden, they may not know all that symbiont and its previous hosts were responsible for. And so it seems like to me, everybody is putting their faith in the fact that, you know, a symbiont and its previous hosts, you know, lived a good life. And obviously we get later on in the series, you know, the whole deal with Duran and the mistake that was made. And remedying it as quickly as possible when they could, but this leads me to say, I don't know how you could have, you know, a completely new host like say Ezri be responsible for something that Jen Zia did. Yeah. You know, there's no, you know, Ezri doesn't have any control over that. What the previous host and the symbiont, you know, did together. I think they do a lot of testing and trying to make sure that they do get the most steady, stable type of person to be a host. But you can also tell, I think, that the actual host body, it's like, say, a Duran, is responsible as much for their actions as the symbiont is. And so, like, Duran was already somebody who was mentally unstable and murderous. Yeah. And having the symbiont in it actually created an even worse chemical imbalance that, you know, led to what happened. So, but is Curzon responsible for that? No, I don't think. I don't understand how you could have him be responsible since before he, you know, had the symbiont, he had no contact. So, I mean, it's confusing in a lot of ways, but I just don't see how you could actually legally hold, you know, a brand new person who just was joined responsible for the actions that they didn't commit. You know, the symbiont, yeah.
Well, there you go, everyone. They're not responsible for the past actions. So thanks for tuning in this week.
Yeah, that's it. But that's just my opinion after thinking about it for a long time now.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, I've been thinking about it for a long time as well. And that's the most obvious conclusion. Like that's probably been my conclusion over the years. And I usually most closely have used the episode Dax to form my opinion on this. It's just as I watch more and more and I think about the things that Jadzia says, the things that come out more and more about the past of the Dax symbiote, it makes me question that a little bit. So we have a couple of points to discuss today related to that might change the way we see it or might not. Before we do that, let's do a quick little rundown of who the Trill are and how this humanoid race and this symbiont kind of slug worm-like race join forces to create one being and how long it's been going on. Now, according to the Deep Space Nine Bible, it says that many centuries ago, the symbionts lived underground while the humanoids were on the surface. And due to an environmental disaster, they were forced to join to survive. And so that is when the practice of joining occurred, it says many centuries ago, so it doesn't tell us how long, but you would assume it would be less than 1,000 years, or maybe they would have written, you know, a millennia ago or more. So it seems like within the span of time for both the symbiont and the Trill as humanoids, this is like a really, really recent development that these two have come together.
To me, it does seem like, you know, it's probably between 500 and 900 years. You know, that seems like the amount of time, you know, obviously, because the Dax symbiont's been around and in somebody for what, 300 years?
Right.
You know, so, but it seems as though the joining has been happening before that, and it doesn't necessarily seem new to the Dax symbiont as a as their species, something that they were involved in. So I would say probably about 500, 600, 700 years is probably the amount of time they've been practicing the joining.
I mean new as in when you look at the evolution of both species, like on a geological scale and how long they've been evolving, it's a very new development. It would be like for us if the same thing happened here on Earth and we started doing it around, you know, 1500.
Right, exactly.
You know, it's really quite recent within the age of the civilization.
Yeah, yeah. It always just makes me think of Far Beyond the Stars. Ah, she's got a worm in her belly.
Right.
And how strange it would have been, you know, even the first, you know, few hundred years of joining, you know, it would have been such a strange thing. And we know that the Trill, the Symbiosis Committee, really does keep a tight rein on who is joined and who is not joined, because they don't have enough symbionts to join with all of the Trill, and they didn't want the symbionts to be sold and bartered as some kind of strange commodity, and they were protecting them because they're really defenseless. And so I thought it's kind of a cool thing, the idea of basically taking care of that which is most defenseless. I think that's a really neat idea for, you know, Star Trek to be talking about, you know, that we take care of our most innocent and most, defenseless beings. And the symbionts are obviously very intelligent. They just have no way to really take care of themselves, really, honestly, in the same way a baby doesn't.
Right, right. Well, I think there are two sides to that. You know, that's a really good point. That's one I haven't thought about very much, the fact that they are protecting the symbionts because they are somewhat helpless on their own. At the same time, I think it's to protect the society itself from chaos, because there are only around 300 symbionts available for hosting each year. But 1,000 Trill apply to be joined every year. So obviously only about 30% of them have any chance of being approved under any circumstances, just because that's how many symbionts are available.
Right.
But at the same time, the fact that that's 1,000 Trills who apply under the notion that very few Trill are actually able to join.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, it's presented that very, very few are capable of joining, where in reality, we find out that nearly half the population is capable of being joined. And that would create an incredible, like instead of 1,000 people applying, you'd have tens of thousands of people applying every year. And then the symbiont itself could become an item that is seen as valuable, you know, like precious metals here on Earth, for example, where people would start competing financially. And then, of course, I would think that it would raise crime rates as well. And it could just really throw the entire society into chaos and cause things to break down.
Well, and two, you know, you think about this, the way that they're doing this is taking care of the symbionts and giving the symbiont the best experience as possible of humanoid existence. Mm-hmm. And then of course they get to carry that on to the next host in creating this vast array of knowledge and experience in, you know, you get to pass that on to somebody. You know, it's a lot like, you know, passing on the wisdom of your family to the next generation, no pun intended. And so, you know, some families do that better than others, you know, and so the Symbiosis Commission idea is to really make this gift the best that it can be, you know. I really do kind of see this in a lot of ways, really being very connected with the idea of having children and you know, you raise them from young and you take care of them and then they grow old and then, you know, it's time for them to pass on what they've learned, you know, so it's this cycle of life, you know, but we see it played out over and over again in with the symbiont in A New Host. And I think that's really, I had honestly not really thought about it until we started talking. And I think that's a really neat, a kind of a big, bold idea when you start to think about the idea of taking care of your most defenseless being and how we treat them too, says a lot about us, you know, and for the Trill, them taking care of the symbionts like that says a lot about their society and what they value. Yeah. You know, they value life and they value the most innocent and kind of defenseless life very, very highly. And that means a lot. So I think that's a really interesting idea.
Another thing that's interesting about the Trill is that they are in the Federation, and yet until Odin was on the Enterprise in the TNG episode, The Host, it really wasn't widely known that Trill were a joined species in the first place. Why do you think that is the case, that within this organization that they're part of, such a critical part of their culture has not been revealed?
Well, you know, one of the answers for that, I think, is just the strangeness of being a host and having a symbiont in you, and the lot of I think a lot of alien species wouldn't understand that the Trill meet, and so they've learned to keep that private. And part of the Apocrypha or the novel series has been that the alien parasites we saw in Conspiracy are actually related to the symbionts. In fact, it's part of the novel in Unity.
And what is the story behind that? It's not that the symbionts down in the pools are mm-hmm. those parasites, but they found like life on passing comets or something.
Yep, they found a life on a passing comet, and actually Audrey yeah. Dax and her husband went and studied that,
and it was related to the
exactly. They found somehow out that related, they were related to the symbionts. To the symbionts. And so yeah. Coming in contact with the parasite, it bonded with Audrey's husband, as well as the Vod symbiont, and ultimately caused both their deaths. And so the Trill, you know, obviously wanted to hide this, and so all of those things together, I think, are very good reasons why you would want to hide something like this. It's kind of something that would automatically make people not necessarily trust you, you know, I think, in a galaxy where people, you know, just they're first meeting you. Oh yeah, I've got this worm in my belly. And, you know, just, I think it's something that they want to keep private. Yeah. One, for the protection of the symbiont, but two, for the protection of their society as well, and how they're seen around the galaxy, at least up until the point where we all find out in The Host.
Yeah, I can see that. And another thing related to what I was talking about earlier with the possibility of creating chaos within this society is that they say that unless the joined Trill objects, a prospective host can request a specific symbiont. So you could say, you know, I want the Dax symbiont. And that seemed to me like kind of a dangerous idea, because I could certainly picture a situation where someone wanted a specific symbiont mm-hmm. and would actually try to murder a current host in order to make that symbiont available mm-hmm. so that they could then get the symbiont. Or they might try to have, maybe they don't directly try to murder the host because they have to be in a program already, but they could hire somebody, you know. It could be like the Tanya Harding having her boyfriend
yeah.
whack Nancy Kerrigan on the right. leg. You know, she's not going to do it herself, but she could have someone else do it. It this idea to me seems very dangerous.
Yeah. You know, I think again, that idea of protection, you know, you having a famous symbiont, who wouldn't want to be the host of that symbiont. You know, you'd really want to be the person that carried on that legacy and did something great with it. And I think that's another interesting thing is it, the Trill, you can tell they really do value the idea of being the best that you can be and then rewarding the best in their society, you know, striving really, really hard to be the best that they can be, you know, kind of like the army.
Right. That's what I was thinking yeah, about when you said it.
Exactly.
Yeah. I can see the posters right now.
Right. Yeah. Be the best that you can be joined.
It's just got a symbiont right in the middle of the poster.
Yeah, it's not
pointing
a really attractive poster
because it doesn't have hands.
Right. It's just, again, it's not an attractive poster. but such a really interesting idea, I think, of having them again doing everything that they can to protect the symbiont and make sure that their culture as well doesn't end up in chaos.
Yeah. Right. Well, let's talk about the episode Dax for a moment. And of course, the premise of that episode is that Jadzia is on trial for a murder that Claystraw and Eilon Tandro believed was committed by Curzon. And this is that his father was killed, and he thinks that Curzon betrayed them. And it early season one, they're already raising this question about whether or not Joined Trill are accountable for the actions of past hosts. And I think it was a good story to have early on in the season because it does highlight the uniqueness of who Jadzia is and say that, you know, this isn't just the typical science fiction idea of, oh, let's make this alien be joined with a worm in its belly, but otherwise we're just going to write the character like it's just another character. This was actually saying there's something really unique about this woman.
Yeah.
Let's explore that a little bit.
Well, and what a, you know, as you watch the show, they really do have a hard time trying to nail her character down. But this I thought was probably one of the most interesting ideas of just studying the Trill itself and what they really are. And, you know, obviously they had created a really interesting idea in the next generation of the Trill. And so in Deep Space Nine, because TNG never picked that back up again at all and explored what they had created, DS9 says, well, we'll take that and we'll run with it, which they did a lot from yeah. TNG story points. And so I thought that this was a great idea just at the beginning of the show because you do have a really interesting sci-fi idea to explore. And Star Trek has done that a lot, you know, of creating a sci-fi idea and then and trying to explore it and what it means, you know. So I do like you said, they're going to take this. They're not just going to give you the base. They're going to kind of, okay, what's the conclusions to this character? If it is this, we say it's this, you know, these two things that are joined. Well, what happens, you know, if we start playing that out? Especially over many different hosts. And so, you know, I think they finally start to nail it in like maybe season three, you know, Jadzia's character and just the Trill in general and who yeah. she's going to be as a character. But this is really interesting because, you know, later on we see this in Invasive Procedures with Varad, the whole idea of what we were talking about of somebody who wants to steal a symbiont and create yeah, this right. kind of chaos, you know. So we yeah. actually even see that play out in the show, what we were talking about. So it is very interesting to me that they really do take some of these big questions that we're talking about here and they try to address them in the episodes.
Right. And in terms of this episode itself, in thinking about, I think we've already covered our initial thoughts on whether or not Jadzia could be held responsible. Because in this episode, I'm completely on the side of Jadzia. Well, Jadzia's willing. That's what's interesting, actually, about the episode, is that Sisko and the others are adamant that you cannot hold Jadzia responsible because she's a different person. Whereas Jadzia herself is willing to accept responsibility for this, although it's more to protect Curzon, right? More so than saying that I believe that I'm responsible personally as a as an individual person because of this. But, right. you know, I have Curzon's memory. The symbiote was there. I'm going to sort of maintain the integrity of who we are.
Well, I also think it was she was also trying to protect that society, you know,
yeah.
That they had venerated that man, and she didn't want to taint that memory. That even though it was a lie, it had helped a society come together, and she didn't want to ruin that as well. So she has two, I think, in her mind, really good reasons for wanting to keep this secret, and even yeah. have to die if she has to keep it.
But it's also not just the society, but I think Anina Tandro, the wife,
yeah.
the mother of the guy who is prosecuting here, it's the Dax symbiont wanting to protect her as well, mm-hmm. I think,
yeah.
and protect her honor.
Which I think is interesting because that idea of honor, the fact that it's so strong in the Dax symbiont, also I think it shows how strong it is in Janzia as well. Like, it gives you a piece of who Janzia is just as a person beside the symbiont. You know, like, it's not just the symbiont. They are both having to make this decision together because obviously the symbiont cannot overrule completely
right.
the host. And so they have to work in concert on this one. And you learn a lot about the character of both of them in this episode. I think that's a really interesting yeah. thing. And actually, I think you see that play out, that characteristic actually play out throughout the series, because you see the Dax symbiont having this kind of like loyalty to people that they knew before that lots of other hosts and symbionts don't. They're able to kind of like draw away from that. But yeah. the Dax symbiont, on the other hand, no. I mean, she's best friends with Sisko twice, you know, she sleeps with her old husband, you know, I mean, right. so you see this happen over and over again.
Well, I think a lot of that comes from the Klingon influence that Curzon gained, because you see that trait in Jadzia throughout. Mm-hmm. You see it with Kor King and Koloth in Blood Oath. You see it with Worf later. It's just as kind of happy-go-lucky, freewheeling as Jadzia is as a young woman, she also has this trait, and I believe it carries through from Curzon, and
yeah.
it's the Klingon side.
Yeah.
And that's interesting because it makes me wonder about the influence that the past host has on the successive host. And in thinking about that, and that's why it raises a question for me about whether the feeling that I've had all these years on this topic, because of the episode Dax, whether that's really the accurate position or not. In thinking about it, I think of it like a song, different songs or different verses, like a new song or new verse, that the host and the symbiont, do you see each time? So if we go from Curzon to Jadzia to Ezri, for example, are these like new songs, or are they new verses of the same song, the Dax song? And it's really all like one long lifetime. And they're, each host is just a new stage in a single life.
Yeah, I think of it more as a variation on a theme. So, you know, in classical music, mm-hmm. you have a theme, but then you'll have yeah. different variations. So they're not exactly the same song, but they're similar, and it creates a movement in a symphony or in a piece of classical music. And that's how I kind of think of it, because when I look at her older hosts, you know, Emini and Audred and Tobin and all of them, Duran, all of these hosts, I really do feel like it's almost like a completely different song, but there's kind of traits from each of them.
But,
you know,
there are motifs that carry through, like
right,
holding her hands behind her back.
Right, exactly.
Example.
And that's where I think you get the variation on a theme instead yeah. of it. You know, it's not a new song. It's not even a new verse. It's a reordering of notes to create something different and yet similar. So to me, that's the only way that I could ever, the only way that really made sense to understand what it meant to be a Trill. And I do think that your, you know, most recent hosts are probably a little bit more persuasive in you than hosts that were, say, 200 or 300 years ago. And right. I think that's evident that in the way that Dax operates, is you can see that, you know, Gen Z is very influenced by Curzon because he was just there. And then Ezri is very much influenced by Janzia because she was just there. And you know, you kind of start to lose some of the other characters as you go along. So, to me, that's how it kind of made sense. And that's why I could kind of then work some of the, maybe what you were talking about earlier, that some of the, you kind of see some inconsistencies, but that's where you can kind of fudge that then if we're just talking about a variation on a theme.
Yeah. I think with inconsistencies, what I meant was that in the writing, in the episode Dax, I feel that the position of the writers at that point in time was that each incarnation of this symbiote through a different host was unique, and that you couldn't hold them responsible. Like, mm-hmm. they're answering a question early on in the series. As a viewer, you have a question, like, how much separation is there? And so the position at that point in time seemed to be that Jadzia is unique. She's her own person, and you can't hold her responsible for the actions of Curzon or anyone else. But then when you move on, I mean, you get to something like Equilibrium, and the fact that Jadzia is having these hallucinations, which are actually memories, and they go and they find out what happened with Duran, and you realize that there's this part of their past that really, really sticks with them all the way through. And then in Facets, you see how much each personality actually influences the person at the moment. You can see how these little bits of all the past hosts influence Jadzia, and you also see how much connection there still is between Curzon and Jadzia, and the fact that Curzon was in love with Jadzia, and he's actually willing to stay in Odo so that he can be there on the station with Jadzia, and they can have a chance to be together. And Jadzia says, no, you belong in me, in as part of me, in the memories, and that's how we should be together and live on, because we're really part of one. And Rejoined, again, where Lenara Khan comes to the station, and Nilani Khan was married to Tarius Dax. And then there's still this connection between Lenara and Jadzia, and that manifests itself again. And so those are things that for me really start to raise the question of whether these people are unique or not. Truly unique, I should say. Obviously, they are unique.
Yeah, I think you do create a completely unique person that wouldn't obviously exist if you didn't, say, create Janzia with the Dax symbiote. You know, yeah. That uniqueness would never have existed. And so they are unique from a certain point of view. So we're going to use a little Star Wars logic here. And I think that's the only way that, it makes sense, is that, yeah, they are unique. And they can't be held responsible for the previous actions because they weren't a part of it. The new host was not a part of that. And so that host can't be held responsible there. You mean you would have had to hold the previous host and the previous, with the symbiote inside it to, at that point. If you've already been transferred, there isn't really anything you do, because you have created something that is unique in and of it and of itself, because you wouldn't, man, it gets really confusing when you talk like this. Because you wouldn't have, the Janzia Dax if they hadn't been joined. Right. And that does create something that's completely different than Curzon Dax, because Curzon doesn't have any of Janzia in him.
Well, that leads me to another point. So, not to belabor this issue too much, because it may sound like we're talking in circles a little bit, and we might be, because it is kind of confusing. But the other thing it made me think of was the host versus the symbiont. And when a trill takes an action, who is exerting the influence there? How much of an action is initiated by the host, and how much is initiated by the symbiont? So if we take, for example, I was actually thinking of Curzon and, of course, the episode Dax, but as we're talking here, thinking of Duran and the murder, is it entirely Duran initiating the murderous act? Or is the Dax symbiont also playing a role in initiating the murderous act? Or is it fighting against it? And in the case of the episode Dax, is it Curzon who is responsible, or is it the Dax symbiont who's responsible? Because ultimately then, when you talk about the trial, it becomes like, is it possible to hold just the symbiont responsible, or just the host responsible?
I think that, to me, watching the show, I always feel like the host is the one ultimately responsible, because they're the only one who could do the action. You know, they're the body, basically. And I feel like the host as well has the ability to regulate how much the symbiont has control over them, or their urges have control over them. So, like, the difference between Jandia when she's joined and Ezri when she's joined are vast. You know, Jandia has spent years training to be able to control what's going to happen to her and be ready for it, you know? So she doesn't have any of those crazy urges that Ezri gets, where she can't decide what she wants to eat because she doesn't know what she likes, because she keeps ordering food, but hating it. You know, it's kind of like when Data's like, "Ugh, I hate this," you know, right. Like, it's exactly what's happening to Ezri, because she doesn't know, because she can't process what's happening to her. Whereas somebody who had been trained for years to get ready for it could control and regulate all that's flowing through her. And so but at the same time, it was Ezri who was doing the actions and ordering the food and making the choice. She just doesn't know how to control all that's in her. For Duran, you know, I honestly think that Duran was already kind of a murderous, raving lunatic, he had a symbiont put in him, and it just created a worse situation, because, again, he couldn't handle all that was going on in him. So if you're already a crazy lunatic and you put a bunch of voices in your head, I don't think that's a good idea.
Right. So when we talked earlier about, again, this comes from the literary universe, but the fact that the symbionts may be related to the parasites in Conspiracy. This just makes me ask the question now, as I'm listening to you describe this, is someone like Commander Remick in Conspiracy responsible for the actions, or are those parasites? Because in that situation, you get the feeling that your body's just been completely taken over and you no longer have control.
Yeah, it did seem to me, at least in that episode, that the parasite had more control over him. And it almost kind of seemed more like
Oh, I know. Let's keep it DS9 here. It's like Prophets and Paw Wraiths.
Yeah, there you go.
Those are the bad symbionts.
Right, exactly. The Paw Wraiths will completely take over you, whereas the Prophets are looking for you to be willing and work together. That's a good analogy. I was thinking too of you know, in Star Trek II, where he puts the eels in their ear, you know, and they wrap themselves around the cerebral cortex, and it makes you more susceptible to doing things. Yeah. That's what I kind of think of as the parasites. You know, they're creating an environment inside your body with chemicals that are making you do what they want you to do, instead of it being a partnership, which is, you know, what the symbionts seem to be.
Yeah. You know, I always say, if you're going to stick something in my ear, I'd much prefer to have a babelfish than a seti eel.
Oh, yeah. Babelfish is the way to go. I mean, it would be great. Then I could understand, you know, Japanese, Chinese, you know, German, French, Italian, all you know, with this weird, Vogue, you know, line. Yeah, fish in my ear.
Yeah, that would be excellent. So it's really difficult to say, you know, like who's responsible here and who's not. I agree with you that I don't know if this is how I felt going into the discussion, which is why I wanted to get your thoughts on it. After listening to you describe things here, I believe I agree with you that there is an imbalance between host and symbiote and who is controlling the actions more. And the imbalance leans towards the host. And that ultimately the host is the dominant force and the symbiote provides them with many lifetimes of experience and knowledge and wisdom. And together they create a very unique being. But at the end of the day, it's the host who we have to look at the host as an individual person. And so if we go all the way back to the episode Dax, which we started the discussion with, I think I do still feel the way that I did in the past, that you can't hold Jadzia responsible for the actions of Curzon.
Yeah, I think, you know, when I look at it, I was thinking about this again, another Star Wars reference here. So I'm sorry, guys, but it just made me think of the difference between a trained Jedi who understands how to use the Force and control it.
Oh, yeah.
And somebody who doesn't. And so Ezri, again, is very much like that kind of untrained, unskilled Force user who doesn't understand how to really control all of it, and she can make weird things happen. Whereas Jadzia is somebody who's been trained fully in control so that she can harness and use what she's being given for the betterment of the whole.
You're saying that Ezri is Anakin.
Ezri is Anakin. That's the name of the episode.
Ezri is Anakin. Oh, all right. That's a good analogy, though, as well, right? Because it is the case where this is something that requires extensive training.
Well, exactly. And, you know, I just think about the craziness of having, you know, 7, 8, 10, however many lifetimes pouring into you, you know, so having like 8 different people talk to you, you know, and how do you control that? How do you know what you like to eat? How do you know what your favorite habits are? How do you know what books you like to read? You know, you have to figure a way to integrate all that together to create something new and cohesive instead of something scattered and you know, just insane at that point.
You know what would be fun, and I think is probably part of the training courses that they have there on Trill, is you take a newly joined Trill host, sit them in front of a TV with a remote control and Netflix, and let them try to figure out what they're going to watch.
That's really funny. Yeah, I was thinking of that. I was just thinking about TV. Sports, no. Drama, no. Team, no. Cartoons, you know, and just how flipping about, back and forth.
They're watching sports playoffs, like watching the NFL playoffs, and they mm-hmm. can't decide which team they're for.
Exactly. They're watching picture within picture within pictures. So they can watch 3 different things at one time.
Yeah. Which is what, that's why it's good that Trill don't have the Force, and they're not like young Anakin, and they don't just pull out a lightsaber and start slashing the television because they get frustrated because they can't decide.
Exactly, or accidentally force pushing the TV through the wall, you know, of the house.
All right. Well, I think that we came to a conclusion for ourselves anyway. And I still find it interesting how the Trill evolved over the course of the series, though, because I do feel that they were making kind of a clear statement early on that, no, these are separate. That was a past life and this is a current life. and then time and again, in equilibrium, in facets, and rejoined, and then just in moments in other episodes, even with the Ezri-Worf relationship. And when Ezri tells Worf, I was your wife, you know, it's that, it's different than it was presented early on. It does become very much like a single life that's flowing and evolving.
Well, and like a lot of life, you know, with the Trill, as in with much that we face, there's a lot more gray than there is black and white. You know, I think they kind of said early on, the black and white here is that we can't have this person be responsible for something that they weren't a part of. And yet the gray is just how much they're interconnected in a way that's hard to understand when you start playing it out. And I think that that's, again, that's just great writing. And it gives you something to continually think about. Cause like you said, it's not just a clear cookie cutter issue. You know, as the series went on, it got more complex, as did Deep Space Nine itself. And I think that that just added to the wonder of being able to, again, rewatch the show over and over and really get something new out of it every single time.
Most definitely. Well, it's been a very, very interesting discussion today, Matthew, on the Trill. I hope everyone enjoyed it. But it's not the only thing that we've been talking about on the network this week. So here are some other things you may have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
The Enterprise.
Because if you break it down, you've got a flying saucer with rockets. It's everything that he was trying to avoid, but it's so much more than that.
He found a way to make a flying saucer with rockets make sense.
Earl Grey.
Encounter at Farpoint.
The alien ship is literally shooting at and killing colonists on the planet, and he's like...
I haven't had my talk-to-talk with Beverly yet.
The Ready Room.
Star Trek continues.
Even on just seeing a corridor wall, you'll see, like, there's just a slash of red against the wall. That's a stylistic choice that they were making in that era. So Matt has a great eye while we're shooting a scene.
The Orb.
The full NDS9.
It's a milestone in the Cliff Bull directing of Star Trek and Deep Space Nine. Defiant marks the final non-appearance of Sirach Lofton in a Cliff Bull directed episode.
To the journey!
Innocence Rewrite.
We'll use a deflector dish to emit a tachyon beam, fire a few photon torpedoes, blow up the anomaly of the week, and then we'll just fly off into space like we do at the end of every week.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
Remembering Cliff Bull with Larry Nemechek.
But the thing about Cliff personally was, that I'll always remember, and it comes through in this transcript, he's a pretty plain-spoken guy, and he would call a spade a spade. And what's your rating on this podcast? Are you pretty much up to
Warp 5?
Prequel design.
Or just, you know, for the sake of the actor, so they felt like, in the design people, they felt like this was a real place that people would believe. And I just really appreciate that.
Literary Treks.
John Jackson Miller, Absent Enemies.
And of course, the larger thing about the whole phasing thing is it allowed me to tell a story that I think had a Star Trek feel to it, you know, with regard to, you know, the issue of war and peace.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of these shows and get your daily Trek Talk fix. We have new Trek Talk for you every day of the week. And some days we even have two shows for you, and you'll find them in a wide variety of places, including on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Windows Phone, Xbox, Zune, or you can download or stream from the website. So go grab some shows and find out what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe. Well, if you'd like to share your thoughts on the Trill and let us know what you think about the separation between the symbiote or host, you can do that in a variety of ways. You can go to trek.fm/contact. There's a form there. Choose to send to a show and choose the Orb, and that will come to Matthew and me both by email. You can also send us a voicemail through the website, or you can go to our forums at trek.fm/forums to talk to us and other listeners about this topic, about DS9, about anything you want to discuss related to Star Trek. And then in social media, you'll find us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm, and you'll also find us on Twitter, where we're always tweeting away about Star Trek. under username TrekFM. And while you're letting us know what you think about the show, we'd love it if you drop by iTunes and leave us a star rating and a written review. It does help other DS9 fans find the orb as they search the iTunes store. Plus, we just love to hear what you think about the show. So if you have a moment, drop by and leave us a star rating and a written review. It only takes a minute, and we'd really appreciate your support and feedback there. All right, Matthew, when you're not, you know, sitting around trying to figure out exactly which whiskey you're going to drink tonight, because, you know, your past hosts, I know you had the Scottish one, but, you know, you had the Irish one as well. You had the guy from Kentucky that was really into bourbon. It's kind of hard to decide. So where can people find you?
Hey, well, Chris, you can find me. I'm sorry. Goodness, that Irish one came out there, and you never know.
You, Matthew.
Yeah, where you can find me is at MattRushing02 on Twitter. You can also find me doing literary treks with you, where you talk about the books and comics of Star Trek, and we interview authors and all sorts of things there. So if you do enjoy Star Trek in written form and picture form, and no, I don't mean picture books, but with comics. Definitely give us a listen there. We'd love to have you check us out. And then, of course, I do have my own personal blog at 42lifeinbetween.wordpress.com. Now, Chris, when you are not worrying in the corner, biting your fingernails, whether or not you're going to get that symbiont that you've just been dying to get, where can we find you?
I love that when Jadzia says, I don't think that Chief O'Brien is going to appreciate you biting his nails.
I saw you tweet that, so that's what I was thinking of.
Such a great line. Yeah, you can find me on Twitter. My username is C. Brian Jones. That's a letter C and Brian with a Y. You can find me pretty much everywhere in social media under that same username, as well as on my personal blog website at cbrianjones.com. And then elsewhere on the network, besides doing literary treks with you, Matthew, you can find me every week on The Ready Room with hosts from all across the network and special guests as we talk about all 5 live-action Star Trek series, as well as Star Trek news. And in fact, this week, we're talking about Star Trek Continues. We have some of the cast and crew of the show there with us. So not only all 5 live-action Star Trek series, but even Star Trek Continues. So go check that out. You can find me also on Warp 5, where we talk exclusively about Enterprise. And you can find me on my interview show, Matter Stream. Before we let you go, we'd also like to ask you to support our sponsor for today's show. They help us bring the orb to you every week, and our sponsor today is Audible.com. Audible is the best source for audiobooks that you'll find anywhere. They have over 150,000 titles for you to choose from right now, and they add hundreds of new titles every single week. Current releases, bestsellers, classics, comedy, business, science, whatever it is you want to read, Audible has it for you with some of the best narrators in the business. They also have some of the most famous Star Trek books as well, like Prime Directive, Federation, Spock's World, 3 of my favorites. They have something for everyone there. And as a Trek FM listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice just for trying Audible. If you go over to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up, you can choose an audiobook. And if after your trial you decide not to stick with Audible, there's nothing to lose because you get to keep that audiobook. That's yours. So head on over there and try it today. Your support of Audible helps them support Trek FM and helps us bring the orb to you every week. So check it out at audibletrial.com/trekfm. One more thing you can do to help us keep the orb going is to make a donation to the network. If you go to trek.fm/donate, you'll find different levels of contributions to choose from, as well as original alien illustrations as badges and art prints. Those are done by Toba Ushi, who does most of the artwork that you see on our website. And your contributions help us pay for the cost of production, hosting, and bandwidth that's needed to bring the show to you each week. So we really appreciate your support there. Again, that's at trek.fm/donate.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, and we'll see you next time as we gaze into the orb.